This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I am joined on this first podcast of the new year by Dimity McDowell. Hello,
H-N-Y.
Dimity.
HNY. Hello.
When you said HNY to me in an email, I'm like, oh, she's always so like hip and cutting edge with her acronyms. So, well,
no, it's by this point in the holidays, you're just like, okay, at what point do you stop? And also, that's okay. So you're a little sick of happy holidays, Merry Christmas, you know, whatever you happen to say. And then also, what point do you stop saying Happy New Year? That's kind of the eternal question, because it feels like it's already over, right? It's the third today, and I'm already like, all right, we're deep into this 2018, you know. But then you'll get to like the 17th, and someone will still be like, Happy New Year, and you're like, not so much.
I have to say that Portland really just, to me, took a pass on saying anything. I mean, people in stores just were not saying anything in the entire month of December. Like, we definitely were early on to the happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas thing, mm-hmm. but there was none of that. There was none of that. There was barely even a like, thank you. And I sort of took it upon myself to start doing it. And I don't know. I'm like, okay, I shouldn't be the one who has to lead this charge.
Exactly. I agree. Well, yeah, but maybe that's your, you know, maybe try to keep Happy New Year going until the end of January in Portland. What's the idea with that?
Okay.
Hashtag everything. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Right. I don't have any athletic resolutions, but gall dang it, I am going to say Happy
keep
New Year
going.
For a month.
For sure.
So, but you have a wonderful, I don't know if it's quite a resolution, but you have taken the plunge on a new athletic endeavor in this new year. Yeah, share.
I have. Well, I mean, so it's swimming, which isn't that new for me because I've been swimming quite a bit in 2017. But I decided that I needed to commit to it because it's the first thing to go. I mean, I will tell you, with the equipment and the drive, it's a little bit of a drive for me. And just, you know, it's dark and I don't want to change and put on a cold swimsuit and then get in the water. Brr, you know, it takes me about 200 to feel like I'm, you know, normal body temperature again. Mm-hmm. So I joined a master's team. I bought a 20 punch pass for a master's team. How's that for as minimal commitment as I can get?
Equivocating. Yes.
So I did that and I did my first swim with them the Saturday before New Year's. And that was good. And then Monday they had a 2-hour practice on New Year's Day. They had a 2-hour practice.
Wow.
Which was long for sure. And I did that. And we swam 5,000 meters. I talked about this yesterday, the heart rate podcast. So I apologize if you're like, I know, Dimity, I know you swam 3.1 miles, but it's going to be good. I mean, it's a very, very like low key. It's the equivalent of a 20 punch pass for masters. I don't think they compete. I may have been one of the younger people there. It's, you know, it's not the DU Aquaholics, you know, where they've got like college.
I love that name.
You know, I know the college age swimmers who, you know, have just graduated from Berkeley and now they're continuing their, you know, Olympic quest. This is very much the other side of things. It's, you know, great. It seems like a very nice group of people, very low key. You know, the speeds are very attainable for someone like myself who is not, you know, didn't swim in high school or college. So it'll be good. It's more the accountability, right? Which we all need. And it's nice to have the team. Like, it's just nice to have somebody, you know. Saturday, I was just like, oh, it's so nice to be like following someone else's bubbles, right? And just to be like, I don't have to just swim by myself, you know?
Following someone else's bubbles. I like it.
Yeah. You know, it's like riding in a Peloton, but in the swimming sense. And,
right.
And then I'll just jump ahead for a second because I put this up in the blog today. I'm hoping in August to do I mean, I am signed up for it, a race in Maine, in Portland, mm-hmm. Maine, called the Oteo, which is a swim run, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a run. Yes, it is. But it's also more of a hike slash basically you swim between islands and then you cross the islands on foot. It's very fun. It's very adventurous. I'm doing it with, you have to do it with a friend, my friend Katie, who is an ultra runner who I've talked about, you know, occasionally on this podcast, and I are going to do it together. You got to stay together as a team. So it's got a bunch of different elements to it. And the reason why I bring it up now is because just being in a lane with somebody else, because most of the time when I swim by myself, I've got the lane all to myself. So just, you know, being in a lane with four other women, like I get a little bit of the rough water experience, you know, or more than I would on swimming by myself. So just having, you know, like kicking next to me or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I just took in some water. Like it's a good, you know, step to get to eventually what I need to do is to be able to swim in. I mean, I've never swam in the ocean, you know.
I was about to say, Tim, you're not going to have a whole bunch of ocean open water experience, you know, living there in Denver. It's not like, you know, you can drop down to the bay and go.
I know, exactly. So yeah, we are going to do some open water swims for sure. Katie and I have talked about that this summer, you know, and getting out and running, slow running. You know, she's very okay with, I don't know if I'll be able to run the full distance. You know, she's very okay with fast hiking slash, it's more like trail running slash fast hiking. You know, it's not.
What's the distance on foot?
I think it's 12 miles, but it's spread out over, I don't know exactly. I haven't looked at it super closely, but I mean, I think it's five or six segments, right? So it's not, I'm not running a half marathon, you know, back to back. I'll have swimming in between. So I'll have a lot to talk about. We don't have to go into this now because Lord knows it's just going to make me nervous. It's only January and it's 8 months away.
Blah, blah, blah. There's some bubbles for you.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so I'm going to start swimming with this group Wednesdays, although not today. Today I'm supposed to be there at noon, but I am not because I'm on this podcast.
Because you're dedicated to the podcast. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Wednesdays and Saturdays, I'm hoping. So twice a week and then one swim by my own.
I have to say that I am just amazed that there is any low-key athletic endeavor in the state of Colorado. Just everything about the state is so hardcore. Well, I mean, from your kid, I mean, the stories of your kids' athletics, way more hardcore than they are here in Portland. And just, I don't know, like, I'm pleased that
you know, I've talked about high school swimming with you a little bit, you know, but Amelia's going to 5A, which is like the biggest conference, like the most competitive conference. If she was like in a 2A or I don't even know if that, you know, but like, you know, I feel like there's probably levels in Portland that because you have such arts focused kids, you may not know about.
No, I mean, I've met parents who have moved here from other states, like parents who moved here, like from New Jersey or Michigan, and their kids were pretty much like, I think I've said this before on the podcast, were like mediocre swimmers in those states. And they come here and swimming in particular is so not a sport here in Oregon that their kids are like the stars.
And even
I talked to a mom once from Alaska who was like, oh yeah, my kid was like middle of the pack in Alaska, and here in Oregon, you know, she's winning medals. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, maybe Portland. You guys are good at soccer though. Yeah, I mean, I think of Oregon soccer. I put those together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. That's interesting. Well, we'll have to compare notes because, you know, back in the day, I was on a very, very competitive masters team when I lived in San Francisco. And oh my gosh. And I was with, so I was in my, gosh, my mid-20s, my early-20s, and I was swimming with, like, a man who'd had quadruple bypass surgery, and, like, I mean, there were people who were not headed off to a job because they were all retirees in my lane.
Sure. Yeah, I've been on those kind of teams, too. I was on a team like that in Colorado Springs, and like I said, the DU team here in Denver is pretty intense that way. Like, they compete, right? This group, I mean, it's the rec center. You swam there.
Oh, I know. I love that pool.
I do too. Yeah. And it's very, like, it just feels right now. I mean, it just feels right. It doesn't, there's no pressure. I can just, you know, hang out. And Melanie, the coach, is very nice. And the other thing that I really like about it, and then I'll shut up about it, but I really like it because she sets the workouts during the workout. I mean, I know she plans them in advance, you know, mentally. Mm-hmm. I've asked her, she gets them ready in her head, but then it's not written up on the board. So like we did our theme on, on New Year's Day was 18, right? And so it was like 1850s. And so you do those, and then I don't know what's coming next after that. So it's not like you can dread it. You know, like when you know when you're going to the track and you're like, oh, I've got to do XYZ, you know, 6-800s or whatever. You know, you just, you can dread it. But you're in the pool, you're already wet. You're like, oh, now we're doing four sets of 450. Oh, all right, fine. You know, like, and you just do it, you know, you follow the bubbles. Right. So, anyway. Sweet, I don't know what you got for Christmas. Did you get a spoon for Christmas?
I did not get a spoon. I did, however, did I tell you, I did get my garbage can that I asked for.
I saw that. That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, you got 1,500 miles, which is even better, right?
Yeah, I did. I gave a present to myself and I finished that up. So, yeah, so with, as I mentioned before, that I had never kept track of my annual mileage, and I was always so envious, or particularly I remember at the end of 2016, I was envious of people who had kept track of their mileage. And so I talked to a couple of people about how they did it, and, you know, with technology, it's not, not all that.
Yeah.
And so, but I didn't keep an eye on it. And then on December 18th, I suddenly was like, whoa, I'm really close to 1,500. And I had, at some point, maybe last January, I'd put in that I wanted to do 1,400 miles in 2017. I'd put that in as my goal on Strava. And so I saw that I'd gone past that and saw that I was, you know, 57 or 53 miles or something away from 1,500. And so it really kept me very accountable because we had frozen rain on top of snow here the day before on Christmas Eve day. And so Christmas, the 25th, the 26th, and the 27th, I had to run in yak tracks because it was quite icy out.
Sure.
And so, you know, I find running on yak tracks, it's, you know, a little harder on the system than it is to run just in a regular pair of running shoes. So I didn't want to do my, you know, at too much mileage. So I did 5 miles each day. So got in 15 there. And so, yeah, I was very excited. So I ended up doing 1,508.6 miles. So
wow, that's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it was definitely the marathon training that got me there.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it was, I was very excited about it. And then it was funny, I was sharing my experience with our friend Michael Goff, the father runner in Massachusetts. And he was saying, though, that, and he was also going after an annual goal. And he was saying he feels, you know, let down now, you know, kind of that sort of similar to post-race blues of like, oh, okay, there, I exceeded my goal. And, you know, it's like Sisyphus, you know, now you're back at the bottom of the...
Well, I was going to say, yeah, that odometer like rolls over to 000. It kind of
That's a good analogy.
Hurts a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then this morning on my run, I was thinking about that. And I was like, oh, and it's also the same thing with found change. Like now I'm back to, you know, I mean, Molly and I went out on New Year's Day and was with a specific goal to find some change. And so, but, and I guess I'll share my tally was, found, in 2017, found $23.19 while running.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All changed, no paper. So yeah. So anyway, so, but both those now it's, you know, back to 00 for everything. So, anyway, yeah.
No, that's right. But that's awesome. And you know, it's so nice because at the end of the year, like when you need that kick in the pants around, you know, mid-December, if you do have that goal, you're like, oh, okay, I can go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah, I have to tell you, you know, I am not the found change girl in this situation. But, you know, that week, I had a week of $21.
I know.
So I found a one walking Mason. Right. Uh-huh. And so I put that up on Instagram. I put the $1 in his collar. I was very excited. And then speaking of swimming and swimming meets in high school, walking out of the parking lot, walking out of a swim meet in an almost empty parking lot. And there was just a 20 lying right there.
Right, well, you
and
told
Amelia
me,
was like, that's mine. And I was like, no, it's not. It's mine. I'm here. And I picked it up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's right. My, our family, they give me all their found money. And we keep it in one jar. And so I tallied that and that was $11.89.
Sweet.
And I keep it in that 40, cute little
almost $40.
I know. Yeah. 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 If I ever did anything with it, Molly donated her, found change. She donated hers to, organization that feeds the homeless here in Portland. And so I'm contemplating what I should be doing with my money. So, because I have quite a stash of previous year's change in my closet on like the very, very top shelf. So it's just sitting there waiting, waiting for
the
big one.
And you know what? And now that you have,
hold on.
You know what Augie would rally for is a little bulldog rescue. Those dog rescues always need money. Oh. I will tell you. You know, they foster them, and I have the Weimaraner one in my charity giving queue.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Something to think about.
Yeah. So, and did you get a spoon for Christmas?
I did not get a spoon. I got a new dishwasher rack. Is that what that's called? A new drying rack.
A new drying rack. Oh, yeah.
That was on my list. The other household item that was on my list that I got was a shower rack. It was a year of racks for me, you know, that holds your shampoo and stuff.
Yes.
And so I got this really nice deluxe one that was like, it's like two levels, you know, so, and like, it has little holes so that you can turn like the bottle of shampoo upside down.
You know? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting. You're in a hotel.
Like, place for your razors, place for your loofahs, all that. And then I put it in our shower, and of course, like the water turner on or dial is too close to the shower head. So I cannot use my deluxe rack. So instead, the kids who have a bathtub, so they're, you know, their dial. What is that called? The faucet, I guess?
The spigot. The dial. I don't know. Alex, what do you think you call that thing that you turn the handle to make it be hot to cold? Oh, look, it's good. A young person can't think of the word either.
Okay, all right. Anyway, we'll call it the faucet. They have a bathtub, so that's closer to the tub, right? Uh-huh. And then you pull up the little, you know, plunger thing to get the shower to turn on. So they get the new rack.
Oh, my goodness.
I was so excited about it. I loved it so much. I took off all the tags and the cardboard and stuff. And I get their old one because ours was really rusty and it was like leaving marks on the wall.
I love you saying because you loved it so much. You just
hey, you know what? You got to pick your wins where you can, you know, like I wasn't going to be able to try a new cashmere sweater, but I was able to get really excited about my rack. So that's what I got. And then what else did I get? I got, oh my gosh, I actually need to put a picture up on this on Instagram. I've been meaning to. But you know, the Avid Brothers have this line, decide what to be and go be it. It's like one of my favorites ever. I love it. I love it. I love that song. I love the line. I love everything about it. And Sarah, my little sister, had been taking a pottery class and she made me this cute box to kind of, whatever it holds. I don't know what it'll hold. But in the bottom, it says, you take off the lid and it says, decide what to be and go be it. And it's got a giraffe sticking its head in there, which is kind of, you know, what we call spirit animal. I don't know, whatever. But, you know, that's the animal I identify most with. And I started crying. I was so touched by it. That was probably my best present.
Oh, for sure. That's awesome. You totally need to put up a picture of that on Instagram at the Mother.
It's awesome. It's very cool. It's very, very cool. What about you? What was your best gift?
Oh, there weren't many to choose from. So.
You got a shower rack too?
Yeah, no. How about the dog? The dog. Yeah, Molly asked me the other day on a run. She said, "So rank your family members in order of how much they love the dog." And I put myself first, and I put Phoebe, Phoebe, then Jack, then John, then a very far distant Daphne, because she's very loyal to the cat, who's having a very tough transition. Miller's having a very tough time with the dog. And so I told, Jack was out on New Year's Day watching football with some of his friends, so I told the kids, and they got incensed. They're like, "Mom, you do not love the dog more than Phoebe loves the dog." They all like rallied around how much Phoebe loves Augie. and they're like, "Oh, Dad loves him the least." I'm like, "Are you kidding? Like, have you seen your dad with that dog?" But yeah, so it's Augie's the present.
Augie is the present.
Yeah,
present in many ways. That's great. Is his tummy all better?
We just started him on round two of antibiotics because it seemed like it did not seem to be kicked by round one of double dose of antibiotics. So he is back on them again.
Are we quadrupling it this time?
Oh my goodness. Oh, and he's such a prankster with not like pretending like he swallows the pill and then, you know, he like puts it on the floor like a minute later. I'm like, "Doh!"
Yeah.
So
yeah. Have you learned the trick about how to shove it down their throat?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. This morning, I just was like, dude, you. And after I did, I'm like, Jack, can you imagine having to do this to the cat? Like, you just have these bloody stumps. Whereas with the dog, I'm like, yeah, my finger is like halfway down his throat. And I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Get it in there. Get it in there. Yeah, totally.
Right. Oh my goodness. So anyway, so that's enough of my dog's intestinal tracts. So let's move on to new year, new programs and advice from some coaches. Our guests today are three coaches/experts from the Train Like a Mother Club. Jennifer Harrison, one of the triathlon coaches, Justin Ross, the mental training expert, and Jen Gill, who leads the Ragnar Relay programs in the starting next week, Stride into the Goo Year. Tim and I will kick things off with Jen Gill after this short break. Stay tuned. Jen Gill, welcome to the show.
Hello there.
Let's start with a refresher on you as a mother and a runner.
Oh, goodness. Well, I am a mom of three. I have a boy who's 12 and then twin girls that are going to be 7 in March. So pretty busy with those jokers. And then I've been running pretty much all my life, started in 7th grade. So a long time ago, I've been coaching about 12 years now. And yeah, it's great.
Awesome. And you have a, you're not just a running coach, you are a personal trainer, right? And you have some nutrition background as well?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So I'm a personal trainer. And then also I do sports nutrition as well.
Nice. So you recently led our awesome badass mother team to Ragnar. Okay, say it for me. Is it Alafia or Alafia?
It's Alafia.
Alafia. Okay.
Oh, actually, no. I think it's Alafia.
Mm. Oh, even better.
Yes.
Ragnar Alafia. I've never used that one, so that's good.
Yeah. I had to look it up.
That was in Florida in December. And so tell us about that adventure. How did it go?
Oh, man. It was awesome. It really was fantastic. You know, none of us had met. We held that giveaway to build our team and picked 7 ladies to join me in Alafia. And we all arrived by Thursday. And there were 2 Floridians, and then the rest of us were from all over the country. So, you know, we all gathered on Thursday. We got to the campsite and set up camp. It was hot. We were eaten alive by mosquitoes. I wasn't prepared for that. Even though I grew up on the East Coast, I live in California now, so I don't deal with those types of swamp bugs. That was not fun. So, we set up camp. It was great. However, camping Thursday night, you know, as many teams as possible pretty much set up their camp Thursday night so that they can get like the true Ragnar Trail experience. However, our neighbors were quite rowdy throughout the night. And it was like an open-air fraternity party gone mad. It was really nutty. I ended up sleeping in my car so I could get at least a little bit of sleep. Some of my teammates were actually able to get some rest, but I just would have been like fuming in my tent. So I just went into the car and got some sleep there. And then Friday morning, you know, we checked in, we were ready to go. And I think if I remember correctly, we started around 9:30 and just kept going. It was great. Our first runs were great. And then the rain started at about 9:30 PM. So, you know, we had all gotten our first loop in. And then it started thundering and lightning. They had to postpone the race about 3 hours, I think. And we're all, you know, huddled in our tents and trying to withstand thunderstorms and lightning. I believe there was a tornado warning.
Oh, my goodness.
It was crazy. It was crazy, but really fun, to be perfectly honest. We had a really, really good time. And then our runner was able to go, I guess it was about 4 hours later. She ended up running her loop. It was still raining. And it was so funny when she came back. She's like, this was exhilarating. This was the best time ever, her best run she had. Oh, it was fantastic. So, I mean, we all just kept an open mind and just tried to roll with the punches as best we could. We ended up having to double up our runners so that we could finish up on time on Saturday. And yeah, we did. We finished, I guess, around 4 or 5. I don't remember. And went and got dinner, took down the tents and stuff first, obviously, and then went and got food. And then just hung out for the rest of the night. We all headed back home on Sunday. So, but it was a great weekend. I couldn't have asked for a better team. We had a really great time. We're trying to plan something for this year now.
Oh, wow.
That happens all the time, right? I mean, yeah. That's so great because, yeah, people come in, they're like, oh, I don't know, I've met these people on the internet. And then all of a sudden they're like BFFs forever or BRFs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We had a really great time.
And what about the wildlife? I know you either saw a snake or an alligator. Which one?
An alligator. Last girls, they were our last runners doing the Red Loop, which was the one that went by the I know it's supposed to go through a river, supposed to go through the park, but it really just looked like a big like swamp to me, covered in this like green algae. I couldn't imagine. I would have had to do that loop at night. I couldn't imagine doing it at night. And the one girl, Kristen, who came back, who said, this was exhilarating. She ran that loop at night. I would have been like freaked beyond belief. But anyway, the last group of girls went to do that Red Loop and yeah, they saw an alligator. I think they said it was about 15 feet long.
And oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had posted a video to the mother runner, and I don't remember if you could hear it, the audio, but one of the girls was one of the locals, and she was like, I'm a Floridian, and I've never seen an alligator this big, this majestic, beautiful creature. It was just hilarious. And she had gone to Florida State, so she's like, I'm not a gator fan, but look at this beautiful, beautiful beast. Oh, it was hilarious. But of course, one of the girls, you know, was terrified, and it was her worst nightmare. She was worried the whole time she was going to see an alligator, and of course, she's the one that sees an alligator.
Oh, no.
Yes.
It's because she put it out there into the universe. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they survived. They are more badass for it. And it just, you know, added to the experience.
Sweet. So as long as we're talking about Ragnar, you lead the Ragnar plans in another mother runner club. I mean, train like a mother club. We've got two plans for the road and the trail, right? Finish it and crush it. Is that what they're called?
Yep.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. So what kind of advice do you have for mother runners doing relays in 2018?
Well, I mean, I think that doing a Ragnar is just an experience like no other. And everyone should consider doing it at least once, both a road and a trail, because they offer different experiences. You know, a road Ragnar is point to point. You start in one spot and end in another. And you are living the van life for those 36 hours where you travel from exchange point to exchange point. And I mean, living in a van for 2 days is an experience to behold. And, you know, you become very close with your van mates very quickly and, you know, have a great time. And depending on which Ragnar you do, you know, your sights are beautiful. Your running through the night is interesting. And it's a great time. And then trail Ragnar, you know, you're camping in a park of some sort and then running the trails. So start and stop points are the same for each loop, but then you're camping in between. So, you know, that's a different experience in that respect. You don't have to worry about, you know, going from point to point, but, you know, it's funny because I would say maybe half of the girls on our team had never camped before. Mm. So, you know, there was that stress plus traveling to a place, like how do you bring equipment and all that kind of stuff. Thankfully, you know, Southwest allows those two bags checked for free. So that's what I packed all my stuff in. But, you know, so each one has a different experience. And I think they're both worthwhile. And I would say as far as training goes, you know, of course, with any training plan, you want to make sure you give yourself enough time to prepare for your races. But, you know, with Ragnar, since you're going to be running three times over the course of your, you know, 36 hours, you want to make sure that you're putting in, you know, double runs or, you know, towards the end, we even have a, you know, Friday and Saturday where you're covering three runs over those 2 days to mimic your race. So that's probably the most important thing, you know, because adding that into your training, you can see how your body responds when it's getting tight, and nutrition and hydration and all those fun things that you need to keep track of over the course of your relay. So yeah, it's been awesome. We had some really great times throughout the year with the various Ragnars that everyone was training for in the club. So it was great to see everyone's photos and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Fun. Absolutely. Fun. And do you find that on the trail, I've never done one of those, that your legs maybe got less sore than they did because you weren't trapped inside a van, you know, kind of in that airplane seat position the entire time while you weren't running?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say so. You know, there's definitely more opportunity to foam roll and to massage. And they even had, you know, massage tables at the village. So at the campsite, you know, there's a Ragnar village that has, you know, where you get your food and all that kind of stuff. And they had massage therapists there. And we even joked because one of the ladies, she went multiple times to that massage tent. And, you know, it served her well. She did really well. So,
good.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the cold and the rain wasn't conducive to me since I'm not used to that weather right now. But in the for the most part, definitely, I think the camping option, if you get past, you know, sleeping in a tent, I feel because trails are just more, they're softer on the body, that yeah, you don't feel as beat up as you mm-hmm. do driving in a van.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Jen, you're also the coach of the Stride into the Goo year, which I have to point out, everyone who does that program, which kicks off on Monday the 8th, gets an entire box of Stroop waffles, which are just amazing. So it's crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And sleeve of chews and some other great swag. So, but so why do you think it's so critical that, you know, BAMers keep moving during this, for a lot of people, is a very cold and, you know, kind of dark time of the year? Why do you think it's so crucial?
Well, I mean, I think that just in general, you know, it's important just to have some kind of outline of how to keep going, whether it's even just a little bit here and there, 10, 15 minutes, just to keep the body moving, helps relieve stress, keeps that immune system boosted. That's really the most important thing, is to relieve stress and keep that immune system humming nicely, to get rid of all the bugs that are going around right now. And just having a group like this, you know, that Facebook group is amazing in terms of support and encouragement. And even if, you know, you go on there and say, you know what, I didn't make my workout, I didn't do it. I mean, there's 50 ladies that will comment saying, oh, you're still doing a great job. There's always tomorrow. It's all about moving forward. So I think that as long as you're focusing on taking small steps, you will get to those larger goals. And that, you know, most of us will have some kind of goal like later on in the year. And if we can just kind of chip away at it now, even if it's just a little bit here and there, it won't be so hard to get started when you're really ready to get right down into your training for whatever you have down the road.
Definitely. So exactly. We talk a lot about just forward movement and consistency in the Stride programs. In your experience as a coach, you know, what elements are really important to make sure that exercise stays a consistent habit? Like, what are some things that you see both with the athletes you coach and the people you do personal training sessions with? Like, what do you see as keys to consistency?
Well, I think, you know, setting up an actual appointment with yourself, whether it's with a coach or with a trainer, you know, in person or on your own, you know, setting an appointment just as you would to go to the doctor or get your hair done or something like that, that you put on your calendar and that you actually stick with, I think is, you know, step number one. And then just making it part of your regular routine. I mean, I think for a lot of us, especially with younger kids, you know, it's hard to do that. Things change on a daily basis, sometimes even an hourly basis. And so it's hard to always stick with, you know, running at the same time every day. But the more that you can do that, I think the better you'll be at keeping that routine. You know, it takes a good 3 weeks just to establish a new routine when you're starting something new. And as long as you don't give up and you just keep trying, you know, well, that time didn't work for me, so maybe if I try this time or whatever, just as long as you keep trying, mm-hmm. I think you'll definitely get to a point where you make it a habit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. What time works for you? Just curious.
It just depends on the day. You know, I'm often working with clients early in the mornings. I would prefer early for myself, but, you know, I've got typically I have clients at that time. So I'll go after my clients. I usually have a pretty big break in between my early morning ones and then my mid-morning ones. So I'll go at that time. But on the weekend, when it comes to my long run, early morning is better for me. Mm-hmm, too much stuff going on the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. Sure. This is totally a sidebar, but I'm always curious because when I'm at the gym and I see personal trainers, I'm like, it's like, how do you motivate? If you're there all day long, like, is it harder to motivate when you are in this situation, but you're not necessarily doing it? You know, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like motivate for myself, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the cobbler's kids has no shoes, like that idea, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I always keep something on my training plan. Like I'm always training for something, whether it's, you know, just to have the race to do it as part of training or like my A goal race. I always have something on my training plan, which helps me stay motivated and, you know, keep me moving towards something. So for me, I think it's hard for me when I'm with clients, one back to back. And then at the end of the day, I'm like, gosh, I still have to go run. That moment, that's hard. But I know that I'm going to feel horrendous about, you know, that guilt and all that kind of stuff if I don't get it done. So, you know, guilt is a good motivator too.
Most definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, as a trainer, you certainly see other forms of exercise other than running, and the Stride program is not just, you know, run this day, run that day. What are, you know, the other elements that you think are so key to a fitness routine?
Definitely strength training. I mean, you can't be a fast runner, an efficient runner, a strong runner without a good solid foundation. And that's where strength training comes in. And it doesn't have to be, you know, hour long, 2 hour long strength crazy sessions, but, you know, 30 minutes, 15 minutes here and there a couple times a week, I think is really going to make a big difference. It helps, you know, not only, you know, strengthen the muscles, but also the soft tissues, the tendons, ligaments that surround the muscles that, you know, protect our joints or attach our muscles to our joints. I mean, that's the point of muscles. They move your body around joints. And so the stronger your muscles are, the stronger the soft tissues are, the better your body is going to move. So knee issues, back issues, ankle issues, all that kind of stuff can be managed much better the stronger your foundation is. So strength training, I think, is essential. And then adding in some kind of, you know, flexibility or other movement, so yoga or Pilates or something along those lines where you're focusing on working the body and the muscles in their full range of motion. So focusing on the flexibility, but also moving the body through its entire range of motion, I think is going to be helpful for you as a runner too. So I think yoga is an excellent complement to running in general, just the kind of the mindfulness of it and being present in that moment. Cause I think, you know, runners tend to be very type A and, you know, lap splits and mile times and all that kind of stuff. And yoga kind of takes that off the table and makes you focus more about just being in that moment and relaxing the mind a little bit and not worrying so much about this number and what your body is going to do, you know, 4 miles down the road. You're right there in that moment and just moving and focusing on what your body can do right then and there. So yeah, I'm a big fan of yoga, but any kind of strength is going to help you, I think, is the best thing that a runner can do for themselves.
Well, we look forward to seeing you throughout the year in the various Train Like a Mother clubs. And thanks for joining us, Jen.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful day.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Next, we're joined by Justin Ross, a Denver-based psychologist who works with runners and triathletes. We're going to talk about the mental aspects of running. This father runner oversees the Perform Like a Mother program. Welcome back to the show, Justin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Happy 2018. And as we leap forward into 2018, we want to rewind backwards to 2017. Maybe one of your lowlights, but you are an awesomely strong, talented runner, but you had a wince-inducing Boston Marathon qualifying situation. You want to tell us about that?
I did, yeah. So and thanks for the compliment there. So I got to run Boston in April this year, 2017, and it was a hot day, so I took it easy. And then it was such an amazing event that I knew I wanted to get back there. So I trained for a race and ran a race in September. And I qualified. I had a cushion of 3 minutes and 17 seconds, which I thought was going to be plenty of time. You know, historically, I think the greatest cutoff ever was 2:28. So I thought I had enough cushion. And then the day came where they announced the cutoff, and it was a 3 minute and 23 second cutoff. Mm. So I missed the bib by 6 seconds.
Oh, missed the bib.
And yeah. Also, hadn't you qualified earlier last, like you had a qualifying time, but you wanted to better it, or am I making that story up? And so you ran slightly faster, or am I making that up?
No, I didn't. That was the only chance I had to qualify for 2018.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I guess the nice thing, the race that I ran was technically the last weekend for 2018, but the first weekend for 2019. So that time will count for a 2019 bib. So technically I'm qualified for 2019. I just, I think I'll need to better my chances, run a little bit faster this coming summer.
See, but I wonder whether there's going to be a boomerang effect and people are going to be so dispirited that you had to, you know, overqualify, for lack of a better term, that they'll be like, yeah, no, not going to go for it. Do you think, are you holding out hope that that might happen? Yeah.
It might.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know with runners and with what the BAA is going to do for 2019. You know, I know it's certainly a bucket list item for a lot of people. So I think in order to feel comfortable, you know, I'm going to try to get at least a 5 minute cushion, if not a little bit more.
Wow. Wow. Oh, well, good luck to you on that one.
Hey, thanks.
Better, better you than us.
Especially as a young male, right? I mean, it's one thing to be, you know, a middle-aged female, but a young male, man, that is whippersnapper territory.
The times are quick, that's for sure. They are quick.
Yeah. So the name of the TLAM Club program you oversee, as I said, is called Perform Like a Mother. So how do you define someone who is performing like a mother? Like, what's the mindset and mental tactics that you hope that people, you know, take away from the program and use in their rest of their lives?
Yeah. So the way I approach really all runners that I get a chance to work with is learning how to use the mind as an asset rather than as a liability or as an enemy. You know, one of the ways I think about it is our mind is always with us no matter what we're doing or where we're going. And so having some awareness and some understanding about how it's functioning and how it's operating is a really important start. And then learning some skills to use both when you're training and when you're recovering and also just when you're living so that you can perform at your best. So I think about that's the kind of the general umbrella that I think about when I work with athletes. And this program that we've set up is really based on kind of three core sections. So we call the first section the foundation, which is really about, and this is a great time of year for it. It's really about understanding commitment, motivation, and goal setting and how those things can, you know, can work together and how you want to use those things to your benefit, right? Because that really sets the foundation and the structure for all the other skills that are going to come later. Kind of the second area or the second big category we call you know, high performance mental skills training, which is a mouthful, but really it's just about understanding, you know, the thoughts in your thinking when you're out running, when you're out training, and again, how to use your mind as a skill so that you can perform at your best. And then the last section is we kind of put it all together and we call it execution when it counts. So this is about having a plan and having some specific things to utilize when it's race day and when, you know, when you're trying to go after that goal that you set for yourself earlier in the season.
Let me chime in here for a second, because I was lucky enough to be able to sit on a lot of the sessions in the first part of this 2017. And it was really, really helpful. And what was interesting is that I think people came in thinking that they were going to learn how to, you know, utilize a mantra or, you know, how to break through the wall at mile 18 of a marathon. And certainly we cover those things on the execution or executing when it counts or on race day. But really it's going back and digging deep into the motivation and your goals and your commitment and then practicing. It's that second level when we're talking about the what's the mouthful? I still don't know exactly what it's called.
The high performance mental skills training.
high performance mental skills training, and say that 12 times fast. But but that's really, I kind of think of that, that's phase two, and that's taking what you learn and, you know, cementing your goals and everything that you learn in that first phase to taking that out onto the road every single time you run, you know. And that sounds more intense than it's supposed to be, but it's just tuning in and realizing, what are you thinking and how are you thinking and how can you change that if it isn't benefiting you? And I mean, it just goes so much deeper than picking a mantra, you know?
Right.
And I think people sometimes think of it as, oh, I wasn't mentally tough enough on race day. Well, you know why? Is because you didn't do the work back a couple months ago that would connect you to be able to hang in on race day when you didn't want to. It's not just like something you can turn on and off. And that was my big revelation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, every day and every run affords you the opportunity to do some type of work mentally. And it doesn't have to be extensive. It could be, you know, dedicating 5 to 10 minutes of each run to work on one of these specific skills. And it's, you know, it's a parallel to running itself. The more consistent you are in doing these things over the course of time, the more accessible they're going to be when you really want them to be. And, you know, one of the things we talk about, there's kind of like this myth or this idea that some people have that you can just turn on mental toughness or grit at mile 20 of a marathon when you haven't practiced any of these skills all season long. And it just doesn't work. It's this building effect, you know, that you need to do. And it starts now. It's January. It's early January. People are starting to put their season together. And the more you can connect to the motivation and the commitment and the more meaningful those things are, the more likely you're going to be able to do the work in the middle in terms of understanding your mindset. That's going to have an impact later in the season when you want it to be there.
That's intriguing. So as a longtime runner and a new dog owner, I have to ask, can you teach an old dog new tricks? Like, can experienced runners really change their mindset and their mental tactics?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, as long as you have a mind, you have the opportunity to work on changing it and to work on improving it and to utilize it like a skill. And I think just even that belief of I can't do things differently, or, you know, I'm an old dog and I can't learn new tricks, like that in and of itself is a belief that's going to cut you short. And so the, you know, the first thing I really recommend to anybody who's going to go down this path is to have a little bit of openness to this, to have some openness to giving these skills a chance, and then to just working on them slowly to see what kind of impact they're going to have. One of the things that I recommend to a lot of people up front is, you know, here's a way to play with it, is to take a week or to take a few days and to just really get down on yourself and your mind and everything that you do. You know, wake up and just be as negative as you can in your mind, and do that in your running. You know, tell yourself how bad of a run it is and just how awful it is and how bad it feels, and see how you feel emotionally and see how that affects your performance. And then, you know, conversely, to do the opposite, then to spend a few days or a week where you're really congratulating yourself and you're being kind to yourself and you're giving yourself props and kudos, and see how you feel then, and then see how that affects your performance. And just even that simple little idea or those simple little tactics, I think goes a long way into giving you a little bit of insight into how powerful the mind can be in terms of not only performance, but how you feel about your performance.
Even hearing you say that, Justin, like when you were saying, oh, you know, try for a couple of days to be as negative as you can, I thought, oh, that sounds dreadful. I don't want to do that. I would just like, oh, I don't, you know, I'm thinking like, oh, I have to start that on Saturday. Oh, then Saturday, Sunday, Monday are going to be just awful.
Uh-huh. And
so I'm like, huh, okay, maybe that's telling me something.
It's like the equivalent of, you know, like when you're doing like the muscle relaxation technique, you know, where you're like squeezing as hard as you can, you know, and giving yourself white knuckles and then relaxing so you can actually feel the relaxing more because you've squeezed, right? And so if you go so far down in the negative, then when you come back up, you're like, oh yeah, this makes a difference.
Yeah, it's like a breath of fresh air. And yeah, Sarah, to have that awareness, like, oh gosh, that I can feel it already. I'm not even doing it. And yet thinking about doing it is kind of, it's a painful, dreadful experience.
And so I wanted to just talk for a second, just because we've, you know, this is our second year of doing these, and last year they were super helpful, and we kept the groups really small, and had some it's a little bit of a complicated puzzle to put together, right? Because we want to get people on specific dates so that they can be with Justin and ask him questions and have direct access to this amazing sports psychologist. But you know, that's like, you know, your Tuesday is awesome. My Tuesday is way too crowded. You know, like there's, it's hard to do, you know?
Right.
So what we're going to do this year is we are going to do, open them up. We're going to do one a month. And we are going to open them up to 20 people and reduce the cost quite significantly. And what we're going to do is have, in January, February, March, we're going to spend some time on those, on layers one and two, right, Justin? Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, yeah. So last year, sorry to jump in, Dimity, but you're right. Last year we tried to separate the, you know, those three sessions out a little bit more firmly. And I think this year it makes sense. And we had some conversation about keeping them a little bit more fluid. So really at the, you know, the first quarter here, the first 3 months is taking that idea of the foundation of goals and commitment and motivation and blending it with some of the, you know, the mental skills training and making both of those things a little bit more fluid and more accessible to hopefully a lot of people, because we, you know, I personally find these skills really helpful and we want to give them access to a lot of your runners.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be up relatively soon. The first date, I think we're looking at January 16th, which is in a couple of weeks, and we'll have that registration open by next week. So just wanted to tell you about that.
I also just want to jump in. I want, as a perk of being the co-founder of the business, I want to be and perform like a mother this year.
Okay.
Like
that's a perk that we can let you in. I think I can create a comp code for you.
Okay. Thank you.
I love it. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarah, what do you feel like you need to work on? I'm just curious. Like what would you want out of perform like a mother?
That I find, probably for the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 races that I've done, I feel that during the training I hold so firmly and so, positively onto the goals that I have. And then on race day, then particularly in the later miles, it's like, oh, you know, that it wasn't all that important. Like it's okay.
Sure. Slippery. Yeah. Slippery for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that, but I really want to hold on to that. And so, you know, and I don't know, there's just a part of it. Just when I think I'm okay with my quote glory days being behind me, then I'm like listening to Justin talk. I'm like, okay, maybe I could still, you know, run like a 155 half or something like that. I thought I lost all the notes on my iPhone. This is a side note, but I was like thinking about all the things that I thought I lost because of that. And then I figured out how to refine them. And one of the things was I'd written down my half marathon times at this very specific, very flat, very fast course here in Portland. And I was just looking at them being like, what? I could not believe the times that I ran. And so it made me very nostalgic, even though it wasn't all that long ago. So I don't know, Justin, I think maybe you could help me get part of the way back there. So
I love it.
I think you can help. Yeah. All the way back there. Seriously. I mean, seriously, I will say, I came in more as an MC than a
participant.
Yeah. But just seeing the way that some women unfolded what they wanted to do and how they figured it out. And really, like I said, it was the roots and the feedback that we got afterwards was really very much about where your motivation is, where, what you call on when it gets tough. It's not just, I want to run a 155, but why do I want to run a 155? Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. matters so much more. Mm-hmm. And Justin is just an expert at unearthing that. And making everybody feel valued. I mean, I think sometimes women, you know, our crowd sometimes like, well, I'm a 2:45 half marathoner. I don't need to, you know, think about the mental fitness. And it's like, if it's interesting to you and if you want to maximize your performance and feel so good about what you did that day and figure out why you're out there, it, you know, the time certainly matters for everybody, but it also, it just brings this, this depth and this, I can't think of the word, but like this expanse to your running that you mm-hmm. hadn't really thought of before. And it's really untapped potential, and it's so, so fun to see it unfolding. So I'm excited to be able to offer it to more people this year.
Yeah. And I think the, you know, just the last thought about it, it's not all about high performance. This isn't about necessarily making you faster. I think often it's about just feeling better connected to yourself and your community and to what this sport provides to each and every one of us that, you know, keeps us going every day and every week. And I think sometimes it's that piece. It's runners can be an ambitious bunch, but we can also be a punitive bunch, especially internally. Mm-hmm. And if we can let go of some of that self-criticism and that judgment and just enjoy it for what it provides to us, boy, it sure feels a whole lot better. Mm.
I say let's end on that very positive note, Justin.
Yes.
Yeah. I know I'm very excited now to be in Perform Like a Mother. It's always wonderful to talk with you, Justin. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to it.
Thanks, Justin.
Sure.
Last but certainly not least is Jennifer Harrison, one of two coaches of the triathlon program in the Train Like a Mother Club. A tri coach for more than 15 years, Jen has also competed in more than 200 triathlons and duathlons since 1995. Welcome back, Jen.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Good, good. So 200 plus tries and duathlons. do one or two really stand out in your mind?
You know, and I should have kept real accurate records of how many I really did. It doesn't really matter, frankly.
You're lying.
It's somewhere in that range. But anyway, it is definitely over 200. Yeah, I don't want to be cliche and say, oh, Ironman Hawaii, but I think the first time I've done it, like, I don't know, 3-4 times. Every time I do it, it's really humbling for me. But I think the biggest race that stands out for me is a race called Eagle Man, which is a half Ironman 70.3 out in Maryland. And I went out there my twins were two. And it was only my second half Ironman I had ever done. My twins were two, and maybe it was like my third or fourth, but it was one of my early ones. And I just went out there to have a good race and do well. And I put a ton of training in, and I ended up winning and whole thing and qualifying for Hawaii. And all of a sudden I woke up and I was like, oh, I actually might do okay at this. So
I might have a future here.
I might be able to do this. So that race stands out for me because it was one of those things where you go into a race with no expectations, no pressure. I have 2-year-old baby twins at home working. Uh-huh. And it was just one of those things where it was probably my biggest accomplishment from a mom triathlete standpoint.
Yeah. And how old are, I love that you, like Jen Gill, are a twin mom and I'm a twin mom. So
yes.
twin powers unite. So how old are your twins now?
Well, they are going to be 16 on January the 19th. So I have two teenagers. God. Yeah. We could do a whole podcast just on that.
We sure could.
We should.
Say so. Yeah.
That's sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Oh my gosh, my older daughter is going to be 16 on January 10th, so I'm right there with you. Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was taking my daughter, I have a boy and girl twins, and I took my daughter. Uh-huh. I think I knew that. And I took my daughter out for driving, and she just looked at me when we were out there, and she goes, "This sucks. Because I can't do anything right." And I said, "Well, you know what, darling? You know, it doesn't suck and you can do a lot of things right, but you are behind a moving vehicle and it's negative 12 degrees outside with ice all over the road. So I'm going to be screaming, not screaming, but kind of parenting from a very aggressive standpoint. You know, she's supposed to get a license in 3 weeks. We live in Chicago. You've got to learn how to drive in really bad conditions." I think she divorced me because she won't drive with me anymore now.
Oh my goodness. Awesome.
Well, since it is so miserably cold out there, and I know I just heard on the radio, like, the East Coast is expecting a foot of snow this weekend. So tell us your top one or two things that people can do when it is so crazy cold. Do you still run in this kind of weather? Or do you take the treadmill? Like, when you have your athletes, you know, needing to stay on a training plan, what do you tell them to do when it's this crazy out?
That's a great question. And I think everybody has their own level of threshold, depending on where you grew up. You know, up until the last few years, I would run in anything. It didn't matter. I mean, I'm born and raised in Chicago, and this is life, right? And
sure.
But I will say that I always tell my athletes, safety first. And you have to ask yourself, is the risk worth the reward? Is the risk of running 3 miles in negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit, icy roads worth the risk or the reward, excuse me. No, not usually. So my threshold is 0 degrees. So anything under zero, I'm inside. Anything over zero, I'm outside, depending on the footing, if the footing is okay. So I kind of give my athletes the same discussion. Now, I have athletes that are obviously right in Texas, and it was 25 degrees. They thought they were all going to die, and I'd be out running naked if it was 25 degrees. But, so you just have to kind of, you have to understand where the athlete's coming from and what someone's cold definition is not the same as others. So I just always go back to risk versus reward.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great advice. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so we had our first year in the Train Like a Mother Club with our triathlon. And I have to say, I think everybody thrived. And I think you and Elizabeth, who is your co-coach, are just excellent leaders. I mean, you guys are so technically proficient and so smart about so many different, I mean, because triathlon has a lot of moving pieces. So, I mean, talk a little bit about how you see our, how the mother runners did this year, and especially because they had, you know, three sports they had to get proficient in.
Yes, absolutely. Elizabeth and I absolutely loved coaching the triathlon program. And I think it was a lot of, you said it perfectly, a lot of moving parts. And I think when you come from, you know, when you are a single sport athlete, not to take anything away from the complexity and the difficulty of that, but when you do triathlon, it's not only swim, bike, run, but it's strength, just like in the other sports, but it's just trying to coordinate all that. And if you miss a swim, well, then you only have another one or two more chances to swim that week because the other days you're running or biking. So I think this past year, we spent a lot of time talking to athletes on, it's okay if you missed that workout. Let's be flexible. Let's move things around. And talking to athletes a lot about frequency versus duration when they're new athletes. You know, it's very important as a triathlete to work on frequency. And, you know, the more times, the more wet you can get in the pool, the better. So I always tell athletes, even if you only have 20 or 30 minutes, I'd rather you get in the pool, do a quality set, then skip the swim and do an hour the next day to make up for the miss or whatever it is, because your frequency trumps duration when you're a beginner triathlete. So that was something that we were trying to teach the athletes a lot of. And that changes a little bit as we get into the Ironman and a little bit into the Ironman training. We need a lot more duration. But for the beginners, for sprint and Olympic, it kind of goes back to frequency.
Absolutely.
Right. So, okay. So you've touched upon it, and so that the big news in the triathlon segment of Train Like a Mother Club is that we have an Ironman training program. Oh my goodness. Cue the trumpets.
Well, yes, we do. And that came about, I'm sure Dimity had heard talking about it before, but from Elizabeth and I standpoint, for us, it's just a natural progression. And then in addition to that, we had so many athletes asking for Ironman, and I had athletes emailing me or asking me offline about it. And I was like, whoa, you know, let's run this through Dimity. So, cause I think they were afraid that Train Like a Mother might not offer it. So we, Elizabeth and I, went back to Dimity and said, yeah, you better offer it, or they're going to, you know, something, we're not going to be able to, they're going to look elsewhere, and we want to keep everybody.
They're going to defect. We don't want them. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We want people to stay in the family and kind of raise them from sprint, Olympic, half and full, if that's what they're interested in doing. So we're hoping that it takes off, and we're hoping that people are interested. Elizabeth and I put a ton of time into writing the program. It takes a lot, as Dimity can attest to. It's, yeah, three different sports plus strength. And then we haven't even really gone over all the fueling for all this. There's just such a bigger component to the Ironman training as we get into race situations that could take anywhere from 10 to 17 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's awesome, though. I mean, it's 36 weeks, so it is a long time. I mean, it is 9 months. It's basically a pregnancy,
yes.
Right? You know, and that's lovely. I mean, I kept kind of rallying, like, or, you know, kind of asking for, like, could we do 30 or 32? And they'd be like, 36. I'm like, fine, 36. Because we want to get you there safely, smartly, injury-free, and have a good day. I mean, it is so fun. It's like a wedding day almost, right? There's so much planning and time that goes into it that you want to be able to feel good and get through all those miles and take it in and not suffer through them. So it's going to be really fun. I'm super excited to watch people do it.
Yes. And I think that that's what's really important with the Ironman. And I think your ultra runners will appreciate it too. Just the same kind of, there needs to be a lot of respect with the Ironman. There needs to be a lot of preparation, a lot of planning. You have to create a village around the training that it's going to take to complete an Ironman. But at the same time, Elizabeth and I made the plan very doable. We made it, you don't start off by riding 100 miles during the first week. So we obviously build you up and there's about 8 weeks that are really kind of tough and long. And if you can get through that, then you'll be ready. And if you follow the plan, you'll be sufficiently prepared, which is the confidence you need to start the race and finish it, of course.
So as someone who's done one and probably always one Ironman, I know how much time and it takes and how much the timing has to be right. That's the thing, right? You can't just shove this square peg of an Ironman into a round hole. So kind of when in your experience with your athletes, Jen, what stars do you think have to align to promote success in this distance of training and race?
That's a great question. And I think sometimes people do an Ironman when they really shouldn't be doing Ironmans. And I shouldn't really say that because it drives my business, but I have had many conversations with athletes saying, yeah, it's probably not the right time. And what brings me to that conversation with an athlete is usually outside stressors. People, if they don't have a village and they don't have support at home, it usually can be a big cluster, meaning if they, you know, their partner, their spouse, or if they're younger, their parents, whatever, whomever it is, they need to have somebody on board with them, helping them through the training and frankly, picking up some of the slack at home when you're too tired or when your training increases over, you know, as you get closer to your Ironman. So you have to have a village. I can't emphasize enough about having, if money grew on trees, you'd have a massage therapist, you would have a registered dietitian working, you know, like taking care of the whole village. And Elizabeth and I try to provide all that feedback and information in the training plan. And then when we're obviously online doing ask me the coach, you know, coaching, ask me coaching questions, office hours, some of the stuff that we do on the Facebook page, we'll be addressing all those inquiries. But the number one thing I say to people is you have to be of sound mind and body. you have to have your SHIT together in order to do it. Because if you are, let me just use this as an example. If you're going through, God forbid, a divorce or something that is very emotionally taxing and you think that the Ironman is the way to kind of manage that, it usually doesn't work very well because, do an Olympic distance triathlon then, you know, do something. But for an Ironman, just have everything together in your life and have enough emotional capacity to handle it. It's not emotional at all, but it's a lot of training. So just have everything in line. You don't necessarily need to do, if anybody's out there thinking they need to do a 70.3 before you do an Ironman, or you need to do a marathon before you do an Ironman, not necessary, but lovely. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of phone calls from people who have never done a triathlon. They go right to an Ironman. Now I will say I do have a hard conversation with them saying, probably not, but some people sign up and then call me. So, mm-hmm. All I'm saying is that you can do it. If you haven't done a marathon, definitely don't need a marathon to do an Ironman. Definitely not. If you could do a 70.3 on the way to an Ironman, I would highly encourage it. So that's kind of how I would have everything. The other thing too, is if you are coming and you are injury prone and you're on that back end of an injury, you'd be fine for an Ironman. If you're fighting something and you can't get it set, try to get that injury set before committing to the Ironman, mm-hmm. because it won't get better. And we have to train for 112 mile bike, a marathon. I mean, so just have your body. That's what mm-hmm. I mean by having your house in order, you know, having everything mm-hmm. in your house in mm-hmm. order.
I almost feel like it's a good, I mean, I think of it almost as your life is boring. That's when it's time to do an Ironman.
No.
You know, I mean, you know, your schedule, you know.
That's really true.
You know, you're not, mm-hmm. yeah, you're not moving, you're not changing jobs, you're not, you know, mm-hmm. having.
Getting married.
Yeah, Yeah, or getting married, or, you know, or having maybe a child shift something dramatically, whether it's like a learning situation or whatever. Like it's when you feel like, you know, yeah, I've got things in order. I'm not bored. I'm going to do an Ironman, but like when you feel like it's just like, okay, I've had the same routine for the last year or so, and I don't see it changing the next year or so. This is interesting to me. I can do this now.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Jen, how do you envision the group dynamic of the TLAM club enhancing the usually solo endeavor of this massive undertaking, like training for an Ironman distance triathlon?
Yes. You know, in fact, that's one of the trends of triathlon. What's hot really right now in triathlon is the sense of community. And one of the things, you know, that, you know, my job is to stay on top of these trends. And so Elizabeth and I have actually merged our communities, not legally, but merged our businesses as far as community, just for that reason, just to offer our athletes more sense of camaraderie, team, rah, 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 and all that other stuff. So the Train Like a Mother group will have that opportunity to them on the Facebook page and Twitter and everything else, the podcast and everything else that Train Like a Mother offers, to have people feel like they could ask questions in a safe environment. Especially, mm-hmm. it's really important for beginners, because I think sometimes beginners are afraid to ask questions because they think it's stupid. And really, I will tell you the stupidest question I've ever asked, and I challenge anybody to ask a more stupid question than this. So everybody that's listening that's a new triathlete or thinking about doing the Ironman, I had an athlete, and I'm not talking behind her back because she knows I tell this story. I had an athlete years ago, and I was doing some clinic or some triathlon clinic, and she raised her hand and she said, "I really don't understand what these goos are for. Could you tell me?" She goes, "Because right now I've been using them. What I do is I open them and I spread," I can't even tell the story. I spread the goo all over my body so that when I go in the open water, the fish don't eat me.
She did not.
Oh my gosh.
I kid you not. And she goes, "So you got to help me understand, is that what the goos are for?" And I sat there and I looked at her, and she's a dear good friend of mine now, so I could tell the story, but I look at her, I still laughed to this day about that story. So I challenge anybody to ask a more stupid question than that. So that, in all my years of coaching, has been my barometer for stupid questions. So frankly, there are no stupid questions. So when we have these opportunities to ask your coaches questions, and we have, you know, the camaraderie of the athletes getting on the Facebook page and saying, "Oh shoot, you know, it's negative 20 degrees outside today. What should I do? I'm afraid to run outside." Then the other members, athletes, get on and say, "Oh, you know, why don't you just switch Tuesday and Wednesday, or why don't you bike?" And, you know, so there's just this community that offers people kind of a safe environment and a sense of team.
I agree. Awesome. I agree 100%. Yep. So Jen, so if you could give three pieces of advice to someone about start training for a triathlon, and we're talking any distance here, what would you tell them?
Number one, have a plan, which is what obviously Train Like a Mother offers. Number two, have your village set up. And when I say village, I mean your children, your spouse, partner, whatever. So have somebody on board. Don't think you can do this behind someone's back. Don't think you can do this, I'm just going to train in secret. So have all of that. You'd be surprised. Have all of that in order. Communicate to people, your loved ones. And number three, don't take yourself too seriously. Have fun with it. Ask questions. Don't worry if you miss a workout. I mean, the workouts are written the way that they're written, but we also have to have flexibility. And I think if people are too rigid, and most of us that do triathlons are super type A, so if you're able to take a step back, take a deep breath and say, "I can do this," and have the right positive attitude. And one workout does not define you. You miss a workout, you quote unquote mess up the workout. Who cares? Just move on. And I think you have to have that fluidity in your thinking, or else we would all go crazy. Like, for example, I'll give an example of myself. I don't have motivation issues. You know, I have the other problem where I was like, "Oh, today I should swim, bike, run, lift, and do everything because I'm a triathlete, right? Well, no, I have somebody write my plan so that I don't do stupid things. But I was fighting a cold because it's a negative 1,000 degrees here in Chicago. And because we're coming out of obviously January 1st, which is busy time for triathlon and holidays, I am fighting a cold. So last night I said to my husband, I'm like, ugh, I don't feel good. I meet my people for 5:15 a.m. swim. And I texted the guy and I said, if I don't feel good, I'm not coming tomorrow. And I turned my alarm off and I slept till 6:30, which is crazy for me. And, you know, and so that all the point of that is just to say, hey, listen, stuff happens. I didn't want to get a cold because if I get a cold, it turns into a sinus infection. I'm out for a week. Be smart. Take the time off in the front end of it. And, you know, that. So anyway, so I share that just saying I want people to be really flexible, but also get the work done.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And maybe ingest the goo. Don't rub it all over your body.
And finally, yeah, it goes in your mouth, not on your legs. And yeah. if you don't like espresso love.
Right. I love that story. That keeps me happy every day.
Oh, it's a delight talking with you, Jen. And I really excited to see how the Ironman and all the rest of the triathlon program shape up this year.
Great. I'm looking forward to it, too. Thanks for having me and Elizabeth, of course, as part of this team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Awesome. Okay. Thanks. Feel better, too.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. So how awesome are those three coaches? I mean, the fact that they're like our quote unquote staff is just so,
I know.
It's great. I mean, I only wish that we, you know, had a gym, had a real on-site location where I could, you know, actually interact with them more than over email and on the Facebook page, but they're just all so dedicated and invested. And that goes through the coaches that we didn't have on as well. And I just love that. Cool.
And fun. I mean, I just want to fly out to Chicago, you know, and you know, have a drink with Jen and then, you know, go for a trail run in San Diego with Jen Gill and, you know, like, oh my gosh. So you have put together a wonderful team there, Dim. So thank you. And then so many exciting opportunities. So if you haven't figured it out, folks, it's trainlikeamother.club. So.
Yeah, thanks for letting us what do we call it? Photobomb this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and obviously we got all the other programs as well. The typical running programs, your 10K marathon, half marathon, heart rate programs, ultra programs with Stephanie Howe, who is also just such a cheerleader. So anyway, I'll shut up now. I'm excited. I'm so excited for 2018. It's really hard to keep my britches on.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to be still saying Happy New Year to folks, you know, 3 months from now, Tim.
Exactly. I'm going to be like, oh, you know, it's 2018 and we have an Ironman program. Oh. Anyway.
All right.
Well, good luck, Sarah. And wait, I just have to, before we, let's just circle back because you exceeded your goals by over 106 miles this year. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What are we setting for 2018?
Oh yeah, I knew you'd put me on the spot. So it really depends. It really depends.
That's my gift, Sarah. Yeah. That's my gift. It's my superpower.
It depends on whether I do another. If I do a marathon. This year,
yeah.
So you know, 2-3 months ago, I would have said no. But I have opened my mind to the possibility.
Justin's going to help you, man.
I know.
You're going to perform like a mother.
I sure am. So, all right. Well, Dim, it turns out that early January, I don't know if you knew this, it's a time that many folks are looking for new podcasts. Maybe they have a new device or they're looking to be distracted on the Instead Mill because it's, you know, -1,000 out, like Jen said. So I'm not sure why exactly, but we want to capture some of those eager listeners. So,
of course.
So, if listener, you, I'm pointing at you, listener. If you made it this far in the show, it seems like you must like what you hear. So, could you please do us a favor and tell a bunch of your friends about it? Like, talk up the Another Mother Runner podcast on your next group run or the yoga class you attend, or tell some parents at that PTA meeting that you're sitting in, or your coworkers at lunch, and perhaps most effective, post on Facebook about an episode you enjoyed, encouraging your friends and family to give us a listen. We would really appreciate it, and thank you in advance for spreading the word. Our podcast is a member of the Megaphone Network, and our show today was produced in Portland, Oregon by Alex Ward from Sounds Like Pictures. Many happy miles to you in 2018.
Many, many happy miles. Let's go, Ironman.